You know, I always tell my staff that we're kind of like, you know, we take care of the temple, right? So this is God's house, this is the temple, and we're here to take care of the temple like the Levites did and all the way back. And sometimes they believe me, sometimes they don't. But, you know, so I've been on staff here for, well, I've been going to church here for about 30 years. And then I've been on staff here for about 4 years as facilities director. I started volunteering as soon as I came here to church in various different roles, help run the Alpha course that we have done for many, many years here, and helped out in facilities and everything. And I spent 26 years in public service in public works, in road and bridge operations and park maintenance, and then just answered the call to come here and be the facilities dude, is what I call it. So just so I know who I'm talking to, who's the facilities guy at your church? That's your role? Or gal, yeah, sorry. Guy or gal at your church. Okay, we got a couple of them. How about the pastor that does everything at your church? Yeah, right here. You do that. Yep, Ka does that. I can't pronounce his name, so I just say it's Ka. So he taught me a little while ago, and I can't remember now already. So you do it all, right? So you set up, and you clean up, and you try and get things fixed and everything. It's a huge job. It's a huge job, and hats off to you as well. I'm just going to give you a little bit of history of the building that you're sitting in, so you kind of see where I'm coming from when I look at things, when I go to maintain and do project outlays and everything here at Cedar Valley Church. So this is, if I can get this to work, there we go, the evolution of a building, okay? This is not the theory of evolution, but the evolution of a building. So if you look at, this is 1949. So this is Cedar Crest Elementary. You're sitting in the oldest part of the building right now. So it was an elementary school for many years. There was a wing that was added on in 1964, some more classrooms on the west side of the building. Many of the, all of the pipes underground are from 1949. A lot of that stuff is very old. We did have an issue in the kitchen where we had a drain that was clogged. They went to run something through there and found out the pipe is gone. So that was dig up the whole kitchen floor, put a new pipe in, you know, because all of the years of running the dish machine, you know, the caustic stuff that you're running dishes through rotted the pipe out. So we've got, if you go down into the bathroom, you know, you're just in the restrooms there, right? So that is a 1949 restroom locker room that they used. All the pipes are, you see right on there, don't touch. This is asbestos, you know. So when they came in and did different projects in here, that was all part of it, is to do the asbestos remediation, and they seal it up, and or they have to take it away and whatever. So the church bought the property in the early 80s and then put the sanctuary on, or the auditorium we call it now. You can see way up on the north side of the property there is a wading pool. So the city had put that in when this was still the school building and everything. And that stayed there until the next picture is 2009, when we added another 65,000 square feet. The atrium was closed in 1997. So that was just a courtyard. When I started coming to church here, that was a courtyard. It was a cool place to have pictures during weddings. The ducks would fly in there, have little ducks, and then we'd have to walk them out through the doors and get them outside and everything so they could find some water to go into. But all of this, you know, it's taken a lot of time, and I really think of this as five different buildings. So we're in one part of it. You have the addition of the school building, that's another one. You have the sanctuary auditorium, that's another one. You have the atrium, and then finally, the school portion. So that's a gym, a theater, kids auditorium. Our offices were moved into there. School offices were moved into there, a bunch of classrooms. And then they did a lot of other HVAC upgrades and everything. The boilers were taken away in the 80s. So it was rooftop units that were installed at that. So here we are today. So it's 170,000 square foot building. We're on 18 acres, including the parkland. So now we have a agreement with the city that they maintain the parkland. They did the paid for the improvements. So the splash pad that's out there, the tennis courts, the ball field, they take care of everything except the retention pond, because that was put in when we added on to the building to take all the water off the new portion, the new parking lot and everything. So we maintain, that's our responsibility to maintain. So we have a 1,100 average attendance every Sunday. That includes kids and everybody. On a daily basis, we have 425 kids, students in the building. We lease to United Christian Academy, great partner. They're pre-K through 12. Multiple weekly activities, Wednesday night activities. We play pickleball on Friday nights. You know, a lot of different things go on in this building. Banquets, event district council, weddings, funerals, and other things. On the roof, there's 28 rooftop units that heat and cool the building. 18 of them were all turned on the same day in 2009 when they put the addition on for the school. I've got a couple of them, I don't know if they'll hear me if I say this, from 1997. That are chugging away that cool this room. It's a smaller ton and a half unit. The ones that cool the auditorium are 40 ton. So they're, if you ever get a chance to, you know, when you're coming or going, you might be able to see them up there. They're kind of shielded, but they're about as, you know, big as a pup semi-trailer. And it all has to be maintained. And we have 101 toilets. So I was just fixing one this morning, one of the urinals overflowed in one of the bathrooms on the side there, and this is my pastor, by the way, Pastor Neil. So so you know, facilities, taking care of the stuff, it's more than just taking care of stuff, right? It's a ministry platform. That's what I think. So classroom support ministry. So on Wednesday nights, the classrooms are filled with our youth. They all have their breakout, they gather, have some worship time, some teaching time, and then they all go to the different rooms. So there's 32 classrooms, and every one of them is filled with small groups, whether it's young kids, whether it's the youth, whether it's the young adults. We up in this wing up here, we have adult classes going on. So the place is full on Wednesday night. So every one of those classrooms supports the ministry. The parking lot, you know, parking lots are not sexy, right? But it creates a first impression. If you came in here today and looked at the parking lot, you go, well, the islands don't look great. We took all the trees out last year. The trees were all heaving up the curb and gutter. So we got that all laid down. So then this year the city's making us, I said, can we just not put trees in? And they said, no, you have to put trees in. So we have to abide by what the city code is about putting trees in all the islands. And then you think about HVAC and lighting, that's comfort and safety. If somebody's leaving tonight and all the lights are out, you know, they might not feel safe going out to their car or whatever. If it's too hot or if it's too cold, you're not really, you know, you're thinking about that instead of the message that's being preached or the class that you're going to. You're just, oh, I'm sweating hot, whatever, and that. So what does facilities management include? A few things. So preventive maintenance. So we've got to fix the things that we have. We've got to make sure that they keep running, that we don't have breakdowns, that we're not surprised by stuff. Work order tracking. How do we keep track of, you know, the what needs to be done? So it's not on post-it notes. I have way too many post-it notes on my desk. People stop me in the hallway, hey, you know, and I forget it 3 steps later. So if people, you know, we're working, that's one of our weaknesses here. And we're working on looking at different, there's all kinds of different platforms that you can use. Some you can pay for, some you can use Teams or some other things to do work orders and track all that. Vendor relationships, that's huge. So we've got a great HVAC contractor, mechanical contractor. They'll do HVAC for us, they'll do plumbing for us, they'll do electrical for us. And having those relationships is key. The people that bring you toilet paper and paper towels and cleaning supplies and, you know, to prepare for an event like this, we had to get stuff way ahead of time and keep on our vendors to say, hey, we have this huge event. We can't run out of paper towels. We can't run out of toilet paper. We can't run out of soap. So please have all this, and we work with them, and having those vendor relationships is key to this. And then asset tracking and documentation. You need to know what you have. You need to know when it was installed. You need to know, you know, what it is. So when something breaks or something goes wrong, then you know you're going to call your mechanical contractor or whoever you have do some of those heavy repairs for you. Maybe you have someone in-house that's skilled enough that might have a boiler's license, that does HVAC, whatever. We don't do that here, but we have a contractor that does that. So fixing things is maintenance. You know, we can fix things till the cows come home, that's maintenance, but managing systems is facilities management. We want to manage this so we have less surprises, less breakdowns. You know, you're not going to prevent all of that, because sometimes things just break. So a quick story. So I'm on staff for like 3 weeks. I come in on a Wednesday night. I'm bounding in. I come in through the garage door, and the first thing I smell, it wasn't a toilet, it was hydraulic fluid, hot hydraulic fluid. And it was coming from that closet door. The contactors for the elevator had welded themselves together, and the pump was running continuously for I don't know how many hours from when I left, went home, took a shower, came back, and it was just running. The fluid was so hot, it didn't turn the fire suppression system on yet, so I shut everything down. So now this is Wednesday night, right? We have a community dinner, a couple hundred people, so we got to schlep everything up the stairs to community dinner. And then the next big problem is that every day after school lunch, we have to clean up the floor in the gym. That's where they pull out picnic. If you eat here tomorrow, we'll have lunch tables out in the gym. So we have a floor scrubber that we keep down here, you know, several hundred pounds. And it's like, how do we get that thing upstairs? So I told my staff, I said, we're going to build a ramp because it's way too heavy just to carry. So right up these stairway, we built a ramp, and I hooked if you know Rob, he can lift heavy things and whatever. So we tied a rope to Rob, and he pulled it, and we pushed, and he pulled, and we got it up there. And then I said, well, we have to go up another set of stairs to get to the main floor. So we disassembled the ramp, rebuilt the ramp, hooked the rope back up to Rob, and he pulled it up there, and we got the floor cleaned. So, you know, those are those things that, you know, catch you off guard, and then they switched it out to a solid state start on there, so it wasn't the contactors doing that, so it's a softer start. Should have been done, you know, the elevator is 30 years old now when they put it in when they did the atrium. So, long story short. All right, so talk about a reactive culture to a preventive culture. So a reactive culture is, hey, if this breaks, we'll fix it. So we just wait till things break, wait till the room isn't heating, wait till the room isn't cooling, wait till something goes wrong, wait till the elevator almost blows up, and we fix it. Some of that you can't prevent, but preventive culture is calendar driven. So starting next week, our HVAC contractor will be up on the roof, servicing, doing the preventive maintenance, the PMs on all of our 28 rooftop units. It takes them about a week, depending on what they find. They come spring and fall, and then they do all the filters after the cotton comes. So just doing that, you know, and you can talk to HVAC contractors and say, well, we have to be there four times a year. We have to be there three times a year. We've chosen two times a year to do the PMs. They grease everything, change the filters and everything. So that is calendar driven, and that helps prevent some of those surprises, right? So when your HVAC guy or gal is up on the roof and they say, hey, RTU 13, you know, it's kind of acting a little funny, and they get input from you. They always come and talk to me. How are things running? Are you having any issues with any of the units up there? And if I say, yeah, the one, it's just not heating, it's just not cooling, whatever, they look a little bit deeper into there. Some of them seem to just, they're chugging along, right? But at 17 years old, almost every one of them, they're getting to the end of their life cycle. And we have to think about replacing them. And I'll talk a little bit about capital improvement in a little bit. But, you know, I just had an assessment done, and we have about $3.3 million worth of rooftop units on the building. You know, do we have a capital campaign? And Pastor, can we? Capital campaign, and yeah. And say, we need $3.3 million to replace all the rooftop units over the next couple years, or we set money aside every year, and when these things come, you know, you have that budgeted, so you're not surprised when that comes along. So there's four simple systems, some kind of simple. So current asset inventory, so you need to know what you have. If you don't know what you have, then how do you know when it's going to need to be replaced, how much it'll cost for you to replace that, so you can budget that. You should have a maintenance calendar, and that's just not for your rooftop units. That's for all of our drinking fountains with the water things. You know, they all have filters in them, so a couple times a year we have that on our calendar to change, and all of the VAV filters, you know, that we have them on a calendar to change them. And just to check things, and the seasonal lists. You know, we're almost into that time where it's okay, let's go outside and look at things and see if the water spigots outside are still working, and we got to fire up the irrigation system. We had a huge irrigation system on the property. I didn't mention we own a house across the street as well, a mission house. So missionaries can come. And when they come off the field, itinerate. It's a place for them to stay, recharge, and everything. So we maintain that as well, the house and the property over there. A service contract log. So if you do have service contracts, make sure that you know what that says. Read it. What you can expect them to do. What you should be doing as well in between services. Log all that so you know who was here, what they did. A lot of times you can just keep the invoices because there are, at least ours, it's pretty detailed on who was here, what they found, what they did, what they repaired, all of that. And just keep all that in a file. So if you have something, I've been scanning them in or just keeping the emails, and so I don't have to have a whole bunch of paper. And then again, a work order system. So simple is better than nothing at all. So maybe yours would be an email system where they'd email it to your inbox and it would go into a certain place, and then you can respond and tell them what you did and in a timeline, whatever. If you can't get it right away, you'd say, yeah, I'll look at that, or I'm going to work on that over this next week. Whether it's patching walls or, you kind of triage that as you get those service requests. So obviously, if it's health, life, or safety, you got to deal with it right away. But if it's patching a ding in a wall, you know, you prioritize that, and I'll talk a little bit about how to do some of that later. All right, so here, this is a list of our rooftop units and our makeup error that handles the kitchen, I believe. So if you don't know, you know, get the model number, the serial number, and in the serial number, your manufacturer, your vendor will be able to figure out what year it is, when it was built, whatever, what area it services, what kind of filters it needs, what kind of belts it needs. So if one of the belts blows, you don't have to call your guy or gal, you know, your service. If that's something that you feel comfortable doing, you know, you could change that belt or whatever, especially on exhaust fans and everything. I just changed a couple of them this week that weren't working anymore. So just know what you have. You don't have to have a lot of inventory, because you can go to Grainger if you have one close enough to you, or Home Depot or something like that, or even on Amazon, you can have everything the next day. If it's not super important and you don't need to have it done right away. So that gets into the discussion about operating versus capital budgets. So an operating budget is the budget that we use to reoccurring expenses like utilities, cleaning, basic repairs. So that is the money that we budget, and we forecast that with a little bit of inflation. You know, you can never, the utilities are the ones that really can bite you at sometimes if it's really hot, really cold, whatever. We're a big enough building that we get those calls from Xcel Energy that says you have a mandated power shutdown, and it always seems to be on the hottest day of the year and you have something going on. We had 2 in 1 day that they mandated this last summer. So shut everything down, going up on the roof, you know, everything, shutting it's basically all your rooftop units and anything else that's your big draw of energy. But that's how we can keep our rates the way that we have it. If we exceed that limit during that time, then it's, you know, for a regular kilowatt hours is pennies. It can be $20, $30 per kilowatt hour if you violate that during that time. So that's those operating expenses. Now, capital expenses, it includes long-term replacements like roofs, parking lots, HVAC units, those big ticket items. Think of those things that you can depreciate. Those are all those, and should be all capitalized, not coming out of your operating budget, if you can do that. When I first started here, we really didn't differentiate between operating budget and capital budget, and working with the pastor and working with the board, said we need to squirrel away money so we can afford 28 rooftop units. If we replaced one a year, that's 28 years from now that we'd be replacing the last one, and the first one would have probably died already. So we got to start putting money aside to replace 2-3 of them every year moving forward. The big ones in the auditorium and the ones in the atrium are our newest ones, but they're still from 2016, I believe, so they're 10 years old already, 10, 11 years old. So think about that. If you have that opportunity or have that leeway in your budget, talk to your board, talk to, you know, and say, we just need to separate some of this and start putting money aside that we can use for capital projects as well. So 4 budgeting principles. And I'm harping on this: know the life cycle of your major systems, know what you have, know how long it's gonna last. So rooftop units, if you have bigger rooftop units, 17 to 22 years is there, and that's with good maintenance. That's if you maintain them, if you take care of them and everything. If you just put them up on the roof and never touch them, never have anybody look at them, you're not gonna get 17 years out of something like that. It's gonna, just like at home too, you gotta maintain it. Plan your budget 5 or 10 years out, so you can kind of project that stuff and And so it's not a surprise. That's the last bullet point here. Facilities costs should not surprise church leadership. When things need to be replaced, because you've talked about it, because you've laid that foundation, that, you know, it's not a big surprise when, hey, we've got to replace a rooftop unit, or the dish machine needs to be replaced because that's now 25 years old, or whatever, hot water heaters or whatever you have, boiler, none of it lasts forever. And then intentionally fund capital improvements. Make sure that those budgets are separate, so it's not coming out of your operating budget just to maintain your place to replace some of those big ticket items and the infrastructure. If you have to replace the whole roof on your building that you're in, how much do you think that is? Maybe you shout that out.
$283,000. We just did it.
You just did it. $283,000. Do you know how big the roof is? How many square feet?
I don't know, but we put steel on it. So.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, the last time we did it, we put four rooftop units and did a bunch of roofing for the four rooftop units for the atrium. It was, what, $450,000 for rubber membrane roofing. So, you know, some of those, it can get expensive in a hurry. I have a slide here talking about some capital plans 6 years from now about, you know, and keep thinking of that as you move ahead. So the planning framework, it'd be important to get a facility assessment. There are companies that will do that. If you're working with HVAC contractors, maybe ask them, can you just give me, you know, a no BS assessment of my equipment? How long do you think it's going to last? Now, you got to trust your contractor, because some of them might say, well, you know, it's going to go, you know, any minute now, when it really isn't. So you got to have that good relationship with the contractors and vendors. Identify those systems, your roofing, the parking lot, some other big tickets. Estimate replacement timelines and start putting that down. Get a spreadsheet going. The next slide, I'll show you a spreadsheet of this year's. And then build a rolling 5-year. I have one that's built out to about 20 years right now that I'm working on, and know that items can move up and down. You know, it's not set in stone what you're going to do, because priorities change. There could be something that you didn't realize was failing. Could be a, you know, part of your parking lot, or could be one of your mechanical systems that was working fine this year, and then for whatever reason, it's like, this thing is costing us a lot of money in just maintaining it, so we might as well just replace it. And that you should be doing this every year and looking at that 5 to 10 year outlay of your capital improvement. So here is part of what was proposed for this year. So you'll see the landscaping. So this is basically all those parking lot islands that you see outside. We were at rock years ago, then we went to mulch, and it's just time to go back to rock, right? Easier to maintain. You don't have to keep mulching it. You just spray out the weeds. I do have irrigation in there. I think that if I would probably abandon it at some point, get it working until the trees and plants get established, and then they're going to be fine on their own with regular trimming and everything like that. So about $36,000 for that. I got to rent a excavator, which will be fun, back to my equipment operating days. And then one of the other things we're looking at is retrofitting all of our exterior lighting to LED. And that's really the last piece of what we're doing for LED. We did the atrium a few years ago, XL Energy had some great, so contact XL Energy and they will work with you on rebates. So we laid out $24,000 for the lights in the atrium. So all of those can lights that you see up there, they were all 500 watt lights. The lights that shine up onto the ceiling work, those were all 500 watt quartz lights. The other ones are like old car headlamps, right? So everything in there now is a 50 watt light. We get way more light. When it's CEE, they help XL and they work with XL for the rebates and everything. I said, how much does it cost to run the lights in here? So he looks up and he does a quick calculation and he said, depending on the time of day, it's about $600 just to turn the lights on. And that's not to run them. So it could be peak time, whatever. You have an event in there and you spent $3,000 on lighting and rented the place out for $250. You know, do the math on that a few times. So I've been sending all of our XL bills to Pastor here just to show him. Year over year, since we've done that, we're 50% less energy usage. And getting exhaust fans that aren't running 24 hours a day. Putting timers on those things so you're not sucking all your conditioned air out of the building at night because they're running. And then it has to make up and work harder and harder. So it's some of those things that you can help save some money. But if you come here next year, all of the lights out in the parking lot should be LEDs. All the lights on the exterior of the building should be LEDs, and you'll have nice trees to look at as you pull into the parking lot.
Mark, your break even on those lights.
Yeah, the break even. So it was $24,000 to lamp everything. We got $18,000 back in rebates, and it was 3 month payback. It's a no brainer at that point. You do it all day long. You spend that money. So, and that's really the auditorium is all LED, classrooms, everything is LED. You know, because you can't buy fluorescent tubes anymore. It's illegal to buy them. And pretty soon, yes.
Could you switch some of your fluorescents to the LED 110 volt or bypass that?
So if like all of the tubes, that are in the hallways and everything, that those have all been converted. Okay. Yeah, we bypassed all the ballasts and everything. So it's way cheaper to run and easier, you know, because we have some lights that stay on all night long throughout the building and whatever, and I'm not worried about eating up a bunch of electricity at that time. So here's what I was talking about, that for 2032, $173,000 for rooftop unit replacements, carpet replacement. I always kind of keep a placeholder in there for carpets as well, because it wears out and it's not cheap to replace carpet. And then about that time, we're going to need to mill and overlay the south end of the parking lot. So that's about $1 million for a parking lot this big. We have about 780 parking spots around the building. And most of it was, you know, everything on that side, when we did the addition, is still in pretty good shape. You can crack seal it, you can seal coat it. But it's starting to fail on this side because now it's well past its life cycle. You get about 25 years out of asphalt, you know, if you maintain it and crack seal it and seal coat it and everything like that. We've had some of that done and a little bit of patching some of the really soft areas as well. But eventually it's all going to have to be replaced, just like just about everything else. You know, it has to be replaced. So here's a project that we did in 2024. This was a masonry rehab project. So if you see, I know it's kind of hard to see in the pictures, but this is the south end as you come up to the building. The brick was spalling. It was falling apart. It was actually leaking into some of the rooms back there when it would rain. and it would sheet down the side of the brick. It would leak in, it would get wicked in and leak inside the building and that. So it was time to do that, right? So this is kind of the progress that they made. They were here for, I think, about 6 weeks or so doing some work. So they tore out the old brick and put brick in. And they also had to put a through in the back here. So if you come, this is the far south end of the building. So if you come up there, that's where the water was leaking in. So they had to put through wall flashing in. So that's obviously a change order. They come to me and it's like water's leaking in there. So they had to flash it right, because that was never done properly when they built the building. So it's brick, a little bit of foam insulation, and then block on the inside of the wall. There's a little space there, and then they were able to flash that so the water will run away. So that's kind of what it looks like. And then if you come, there was old windows that were boarded up down here, 12 windows that brought light in there. So I had them frame them up and put glass block in there. So eventually we'll open up those openings and we'll have natural light coming in the basement here, which would be really nice. So here's the lowdown on it. So it cost us $301,000 and some change. So they ground and re-caulked all the joints on the, so everything on the new part of the building besides some of the classrooms is all of the precast concrete with exposed aggregate on the outside. So they ground out all those joints around all of the windows, re-caulked everything. They replaced the damaged brick, installed, like I said, the through wall flashing, repaired one of the pillars, was really bad, did tuck pointing and caulking all the control joints, and then they washed and sealed really the whole building, which should be done every 5 years anyways on brick and masonry. They installed those 12 windows. They used 8,500 bricks to repair what was damaged in there. So they did a really good job. If you need a reference or whatever to do some work, just let me know. All right, next thing about facilities is security. So I'm not only the facilities director, I'm the head of security here. As if you're the facilities guy, you probably should be, because you know your building, you know the systems in your building and everything. Security protects people, ministry, and assets. When families feel safe at your facility, they come back. If families come here for a first time and they don't feel like the procedures are safe in checking the kids in, whatever, they don't feel safe that anybody can walk down that hallway, they're not coming back because they want their kids to be safe. We used to have our early childhood up in the hallway right above us here. And that always gave me the willies, because we have a stairway here, we have a stairway there, and we have an elevator, and none of it could be blocked off. We can't block that off during when kids are in those rooms, right? So we moved everything down, partly with the school and the preschool and everything that they have, but we moved it down into a more secure area. We can section off that part of the building and everything, and it makes families feel much safer when they're here. Some layers of practical security. Exterior lighting. Take a look at your lighting. Drive to your building at night sometime. A lot of our exterior lights are all time clock regulated. You know, make sure those time clocks are on the right time. If you ever had a power outage or whatever, they can get messed up. Replace, and they're not really expensive to replace. You know, get a qualified electrician, obviously, because some of it's pretty high voltage that you're working with, and make sure that they work. If you have time clocks with photocell overrides, make sure they all work. So we have most of it, you know, half hour after sunrise, the lights shut off, and then a little bit before sunset, the lights turn back on. And then some of them turn off, some of them stay on all night long. It's kind of security lights at certain areas. Landscaping. Do you have bushes and things that are overgrown where people can hide up against your building? If there is, that should be trimmed back or cut down or removed so people can't hide. Access control. Know who's in your building and when they're in your building, along with the key management. When employees leave, make sure and get their keys from them. Make sure and get their key card. If they have a key card, make sure and get that from them. If they have access codes. So the first thing I do is go into my computer and just shut off all of their access to the building so they can't come in, come and go as they please, and then get their keys back. And it's not like I'm being mean about it. You know, they could be leaving, going for a great opportunity, or being walked out the door because they did something or whatever. It's the same thing every single time that I do, is just shut off their access. You know, just same thing, they're gonna shut their emails off and whatever. Volunteer background checks is huge. We use a company or a thing called Checker. So get all of your, no matter what they're doing in the building, if they're volunteering, especially if they're with kids, they gotta get background checked. All of my security team is background checked because they have access to sensitive areas of the building. On Sunday mornings, they're down by the kids, or they might be have access to the offices or whatever if they're checking things out. Get them background checked. Have an emergency action plan. If something happens, what do? You don't figure it out then. Have an emergency action plan. Practice it. Whether it's drills, it's severe weather awareness week this week or whatever. So all the kids came running down here when the tornado thing went on at 1:45 yesterday and everything. And practice that. And then safety and security team. So whether it's a small church, whether it's a large church, get a safety and security team. Figure out what kind of safety security team. Are we just gonna all of our security members wear a bright yellow shirt that says security on it. We went from kind of bluish whatever to a bright yellow one. That's what leadership wanted, and that's what we do. And I think it's a great idea that they're visible. A lot of times it's just people are lost, whatever. You're giving them directions and they just look for somebody that looks like they're doing, you know, we have radios that they all carry so we can be in communication. It's actually such a big building as this. So take care of that. You're not only just taking care of the building, you're taking care of the people and the assets in there. And why we need a emergency action plan. So medical emergencies, what are you going to do? Do you know where your ambulance is coming from? We're blessed here in Bloomington to have full-time firefighters about three blocks from us, and they're all paramedics or medically trained. Severe weather events. There's glass down here. I wouldn't sit in here, but there's other areas of the basement that people can go to. Fire, active threats, shooter, bomb, protests, whatever that is. Think about those things. We have had protests here at Cedar Valley Church. And what I always say is that you are welcome here until you are not welcome here, right? So we want people to be here. People come and they're hurting and they've got issues and whatever. And as long as they're acting okay, you know, I don't care if they come in here drunk. We've talked to people, whatever, if they're high or whatever. We want them here. You want them in your churches, don't you? Because they're there. We're a hospital. And they're there to seek help, whatever. And this could be that one thing that would get them to start breaking that addiction, whatever. We had a guy come in here a while ago, and Pastor and I talked to him. I personally drove him down to Teen Challenge that morning. Because he was here, it was a school day, he came in the school entrance, and he was obviously using whatever. But be prepared for all kinds of things. You know, you may live in a rural area, or you may be in a rural area, or inner city, or whatever. Just think about what's going on around you and be prepared. The overall mission is to keep people safe and protect assets. You don't want things getting broken. You don't want people getting hurt. People ask me, well, what's your biggest fear, taking care of a big building like this? And I really don't think it's the active shooter that's going to kick in the door and start shooting around here. I'm thinking about the non-custodial parent that knows that little Johnny or Susie comes to church with the other parent at 8:30 every Sunday, and they come in and they say, I know they came here with mom or dad, but they're coming home with me. Well, that's not happening here at all. We are not going to allow that. And we work with our kids ministry, and we have a great, great program that we use for checking kids in, checking kids out. So it's only the people that that are supposed to be picking those kids up get to pick those kids up. Kind of a side note is to work with your local police. They're some of your best friends. We had the Hennepin County Sheriff over to do just a vulnerability assessment of the building. So they come over, and most of your sheriff, the big sheriffs, will do that. It's called the SHIELD program. Write that down. Hennepin County uses that. I believe Ramsey County uses that. And they'll come out at no cost to you, walk around your building with you, ask you a few questions about your security, what do you do, what do you don't, whatever. And then I got like a 20-page printout of things to do. One of the things that just blew my mind, last year we just spent $300,000 on new doors on the south end. Got rid of the old ones that were put in when the sanctuary was put on. And he said, you should take one of those handles off the outside door of every one of those doors. And I'm like, what? We just paid for all that stuff, you know? And he said the Annunciation shooter, the first thing he did was took a 2x4 and slid it in those doors so nobody could get out. Now, we have all glass, I'm getting out, Even if it's 1 inch, double pane glass, I'm getting out. But, some of those things to start thinking about. And camera system, we have 83 cameras in and outside the building that we're not actively monitoring them all the time, which, it'd be nice to have, but we just don't have that bandwidth right now to have someone sit and watch all the cameras. But at least if something happens, we can roll back and say, okay, I see that. We've had to notify the police a few times on some things. So I'm going to speed up here so we have a little bit of time for question and answer. So keep it simple. Start small, if needed, but start something. Just don't wait for something to happen, kind of like your building maintenance. Plans should be scalable. So as you grow, you can expand that. You can bring on more team members. We have a process to bring people on the security team. I'd be happy to share our emergency action plan with anybody. I just want to keep you safe as well. So ours was written by a former Bloomington police officer who started the program. He was a member here and started, he was on hostage negotiation and did all this stuff. So it's a pretty solid plan. So the last thing I want to talk about is volunteers. So we have a big building, right? And sometimes you're the only one that's doing stuff, right? Yeah, mostly, right? You got to paint, you got to do, you got to fix, whatever. Getting volunteers to help you is a lifesaver. Just before Easter, we had a group of volunteers. We kind of had a volunteer week. I put out some times. Pastor from the platform asked for volunteers. I had 35, 36 people that said, I will give of my time. So we had about 18 people that came in off and on. We patched and painted. We replaced some carpet edge. We replaced some tile. I've got a retired electrician that comes and helps me with electrical work. In fact, I have a retired electrical engineer, a retired master electrician, and a retired journeyman electrician, and watch those three work together. It's hilarious. Yeah, it's so great. They all have a very different way of doing things, so it's great. But You know, volunteers can increase your effect by X amount, by who knows how much amount. Because if you're doing this by yourself, I cannot take care of this building by myself. There's no way I can do that. So we're planning on moving forward having a second Saturday as Serve Saturday. So we'll have a list of projects. People can come in. I have volunteers that mow for us. You know, get on the riding lawnmower and mow. That's what they enjoy doing. There's people that they're never going to be changing diapers in the nursery. They're never going to be up on the worship team, but they want to, they really want to contribute somehow. And if it's something that you can teach them to use a carpet cleaner and get spots off the carpet for you, that's one less thing that you have to do. And one less thing that can take your time to maintaining something else, to you know, to doing your budgeting or whatever. They're the lifeblood of an organization. And people want to volunteer in some way, but a lot of them don't know where to volunteer. So some of the idea, someone to lead the effort so you don't have to do it all, right? That's always good to have a champion for the cause, and then get some crew leads that will, you know, maybe there's people that just love to paint, or maybe there's people that love to do landscaping or whatever it is. You know, and get them to champion that and rally people around them. And we have life groups that are here that say, hey, get a couple pallets of mulch and we'll mulch the planter beds around the church. And it's like, that's awesome. All I got to do is order a couple pallets of mulch or go get it from Home Depot or wherever. And then they do it. And that way you're not stretched too thin, and you can take your time and do what you're supposed to do and take care of God's house, right? So facilities leadership creates ministry impact. It's huge how the first impact is. So you could have the best sermon preached, right? You could have great coffee at the coffee bar and everything like that. But if somebody goes into your bathroom and it's filthy and it stinks and it's not taken care of, they may never come back. You know, some of those things that you don't think of, or they just look around, it's like, oh, this looks old and dated, and where's all the money going and whatever. I know replacing rooftop units and parking lots is not sexy. It's not, you know, whatever, but it is ministry, and it impacts the kingdom of God. Right on, yeah. Amen. So with that, I'll entertain any questions. We've got just a few minutes for questions, anything? Yes, sir.
So first off, how much staff, paid staff, do you have in facilities?
In facilities right now, I have 3 full-time staff and 3 part-time staff.
And does facilities here also include all the regular cleaning?
Yes, staff? And then I do have a third-party cleaner that cleans the school portion. So my custodial staff takes care of like everything that you're sitting in right now, the sanctuary, you know, all that, and setup rooms, you know, a lot of setups and everything that's going on. So that's our staff right now. Yes?
You mentioned figuring out the cost to turn on the lights because you're renting the building for $200.
Yeah.
Cost $600. What about renting the building and what the cleaning cost is?
Yeah, so we've started building that in to rental contracts. Is a custodial fee. So we charge, right now I think we're charging $40 an hour per person. You know, and that way if it's overtime, a lot of times it is overtime, if it's evenings or weekend stuff, that'll cover overtime wages and benefits and everything. So it's just a pass-through, really a pass-through cost. Yes?
You send your security people out for any kind of training?
We do some in-house training. Yeah, and we work with the Bloomington Police as well. So we make our building available for, they had canine training in the building a few weeks ago. It was pretty cool watching them, yeah, running around and, you know, having the dogs, they put the muzzle on them and they just do this and it's like, that hurts, you know, when they beat you with the muzzle. So, yeah. Yes, sir.
How does the church approach, when you have different events or weddings or different groups of people that are coming in and using different parts of the facility, how does the church approach security, or do they, from that perspective?
Yeah, so we try, if it's like this, we have security on site. If it is, most of it is just managing the doors. So if there's something up on the north end, right, we just don't want to unlock the doors and it's a free-for-all. People from the neighborhood can come in. What we're doing is we want to have one person from that group. We let them in, and it's like, you're the door monitor. So you're letting people in. You know, we're not able to section off the building as well as we want to. We worked with the fire marshal and some of the ideas that I had. He's like, no, that's not going to work. So, you know, you need to have egress and everything. I'd like to have it sectioned off. So if a group is in the gym playing a basketball game, the gym and the bathrooms is all they can access. We're not there yet. So.
Do a little in-house volunteer?
Yeah, yep. Yes?
Do you ever entertain outside professional security for certain types of events?
Yes, so we, concerts, some of the promotional companies, they want, depending on what artist, they want professional police security. So we have a contract with the Bloomington Police, and it's about, depending on who fills that role, it's $100 to $125 an hour per officer. And some of them will ask for two of them. They want to be there, you know, this many minutes before the show starts until the tour bus leaves. And we work with the police department to do that. We've never hired like Pinkerton security or anything like that, so.
And when they come in, do you give them an opportunity to work with your internal security?
Yes, yeah, yep. Yeah, we'll be in contact. We'll have, normally I'm like the point person, and so I'm a police reserve officer for the city, so I know most of the officers that would be here. So I would just, when they get on site, I would just say, hey, you know, they exchange numbers, whatever, if there's any issues, or if we have any issues, you know, I'll give you a call. Yes?
You mentioned something about a SHIELD program that the county provides.
Yes,
is
yeah.
A formal request or something?
So contact the Hennepin County Sheriff or look on their website. Look for the SHIELD program, and there is a request. That's what I did. I filled out a request to have them come, and it was a really, really great experience. Yes.
So your capital budget. I'm curious if you have those like broken up into like restricted funds. That this is just for HVAC. This is for say the masonry or landscape, or is it one big pool?
It's one big pool, and depending, you know, there's some, you know, with if you have change orders or whatever and it costs you more, then it's like, okay, we're gonna have to maybe think about that project next year. We don't have it, you know, this is, we don't have the it restricted like that.
You fund it for a year, or you have like a rolling capital?
We're trying to get a rolling one. Okay. Yeah, yep. Yes.
What type of pagers do you use? Or
these are Motorola radios, and they are. We don't have to have a license for them.
Okay.
If you contact me, I don't have our vendor. It's down in Burnsville.
Okay.
But these are about $650 a piece. But you don't have to have a. I mean, you can buy a repeater station if you want to go. You know, if you maybe have a really huge property, but we can get to every corner of our property with this.
We find it at the end of our buildings because it turns and it has brick walls, cement walls.
Yep.
All that kind
yeah,
of
we
stuff.
Ran into that with our old Motorolas, but these new ones are much better.
Okay.
Yeah. You had a question back there?
Yeah. Do you have a location or a place to look for, you know, average lifetime of your 25-year-old facility?
Yeah.
I guess who's got a parking lot?
Yeah.
You know, roofs,
yeah, so I'm a member of the Minnesota Association of Church Facilities Manager. MACFM is the acronym. So if you're a facilities, I would highly recommend to, it's a good resource to be a part of. They have monthly meetings and they have a forum. You can throw questions out on there and there's a lot of information on those types of you know, asks.
What is that org?
It's Minnesota Association of Church Facilities Managers, MACFM. I think it's .org or something. Oh, yeah.
Since lighting and all that stuff is really expensive, is that a separate entity or is that under facility management?
That's under facility management, yeah. Yep. Yeah, my goal would be to have like centralized light controls so I can manage everything from a laptop or something like that instead of going around and flipping switches on everywhere. And
another question now. State of Minnesota, I don't know when exactly, changed the requirement of the insulation on your roof.
Okay.
So one facility I was working with, it was $18,000 just to bring gas and electric.
Oh my, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we haven't run into that. We haven't had to replace anything since 2019, 18 or 19. So, excuse me, I haven't run into to any of that yet. Got time for one more? You, sir.
Army security.
Yes.
Do you?
We follow the state law that says that you can carry a concealed weapon. We don't have signs that say you can't carry in the building. Now, we're a little bit different because we have a school in the building, right? Okay. So, and state law says that even when school is not in session, if it's a place that they lease, that the law applies. But we've talked to the school and, you know, if one of my security team wants to carry, that's their business. So.
You don't insure.
No, we don't insure, and if you are going to say we are going to have a armed security team, talk to your insurance. No, I have personal insurance through Bear, Right to Bear organization, and they will cover churches as well with a blanket for everybody that's on your team. But that's something that everybody should, well, whether you're on a security team or not, you should have that. So.